Blog Talk Radio.
Yakuza! Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio!
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 The Yakuza Kick Radio!
This is the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont. And if there's one place to listen to on the internet, every Thursday, 9 p.m., Yakuza Kick Radio. Tremont says so. Who wants some?
God help us, Jesus! God and babies, Jesus! Help us!
Ladies and gentlemen of fucking America, this is Danny Havoc, and you have been listening to, or possibly are intending to listen to, the Yakuza Kick fucking radio. Fucking, yeah! Yakuza Kick radio.
Hell fucking yeah!
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
You're coming to Gumball Thursday night in California!
This is a brotherhood, and we all stick together. Like my nuts.
I ain't scared of you, motherfucker.
Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Everybody's a cunt but me in the world. I don't know what it is.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
Well, this is Mr. Insanity, Toby Klein, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird.
Oh, I don't like the cut of your jib, fella.
This is Greg Excellent, Bearded Dragon of the Northeast. You're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. If you're not, probably watching porn and you have this muted. You should be listening to it, Jason Mann.
Where are Biggie and Tupac?
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Give a nigga rope for this cowboy, guys.
All you have to do is listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you didn't. Now look at that doctor, homie. Fuck that. Black D. Out.
Bullshit, man. Motherfucker.
Fuck you. Fuck you and fuck you. Who's next?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the introduction.
Hosted by J-Cat Morris.
You are now listening to
Yakuza Kick Radio.
It is Wednesday, January 8th, 2014. This is Yakuza Kick Radio. I'm your host, J-Cat Morris. I got a lot of stuff to get into tonight. Definitely a little charged up, unlike last week where I was really tired. But anyway, before I get into any of those other things, I got on my guest this evening, and that's Kimberly. You there?
Hello. Hey.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Figure I have you on. Definitely been doing a lot of big things in 2012 and or 13, I should say. And you know, just want to get to know, you know, a little more about you. And for those who haven't heard about what you've been up to, you know, a little bit of that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. You'll just have to excuse me. I'm a little raspy today. I kind of got hit with the plague that's been going around to everybody.
That's a little fine. Sick. Definitely a lot of people are getting in with the cold. So how'd you get into wrestling?
It's kind of an interesting story, actually. Growing up, I was actually never allowed to watch wrestling. My mother hates it still to this day. Mm-hmm. So I was always a fan, though, still, regardless. I would sneak it whenever I got a chance. So I caught very little bits and pieces of the Attitude Era. But certainly had no idea about the independence or anything like that until I moved to Philadelphia to go to school for dance education. And when I moved out here, I met a friend who I worked in a haunted house with that happened to be the haunted house that was by the old ECW arena, and we went to a wrestling show together, and I happened to be in the right place, and I actually met DJ there, DJ Hyde, and we got into a conversation about wrestling and training, and he asked me, he's like, well, have you ever thought about training? And I was like, I mean, I would love to. It was basically my response, and it just kind of all went from there, and I ended up at the CZW Wrestling Academy.
Wow. So, I mean, you barely watched wrestling. You didn't know, like, a whole lot about it. And, oh, I mean, what made you actually want to get into wrestling, having, you know, barely any exposure to it?
I mean, the amount that I did get to watch, I always loved it. And it was honestly China who I always watched and really enjoyed. And what I liked about that her was that she was wrestling the men. She wasn't just necessarily wrestling the women anytime I would mm-hmm. see her. And me, I just thought that was so cool and would always think in the back of my head, man, it would be awesome to do that someday, but had no idea how you would go about it until I happened to be in the right place at the right time.
Wow. Now, going into training and stuff, you know, what was it like? Did you know what to expect at all? And, you know, what were you faced with at that point?
I mean, I got kind of a general idea. I mean, I had a few conversations with DJ before I actually went to training because he had actually caught me right before I was going home for the summer after my first year of college. And I had a general idea of what to expect, but it was definitely more intense than I thought it was going to be when I finally got there.
Yeah. Now, there's been stories. Adam Cole's gone on interviews, and he said that they would duct tape him to the ring ropes and chop him relentlessly. Is that the same type of thing that you had to go through?
I didn't have to get duct taped to the ropes but the threat was there. If I would have flinched, I did go through the chops. That happened. But I took them. I didn't get duct taped, thankfully.
Being you have a dance background and everything like that, is there anything that, you know, about that that helped you? Because it kind of is somewhat of like a violent dance routine.
That's actually a really good way to describe it. I mean, absolutely, it helps 100% because I came in already being a strong athlete because dance is absolutely a sport in its own way, and you have to be in top physical condition to do that on a collegiate level. And so that helped, and then also I can pick things up very quickly, and I learn very fast. And I think that already having the athleticism and then being able to pick up footwork and stuff like that also helped. Getting the rhythm of running ropes and stuff like that didn't take me quite as long as it can take other people just because I can pick up a rhythm really quick.
Yeah, that makes sense. Going back to, you know, your limited exposure to wrestling and everything else, now you get into wrestling, you start training. How do you go about, you know, creating your own style and moveset and deciding what you're actually going to do when you get in there?
I mean, I had a lot of help from my trainers. Like, at the time when I started, it was B-Boy, Drew Gulak, Black Cheese. I actually got a lot of help from Alex Payne, too, and just anybody else who would happen to be down from the roster. I had Joker at one point, Moxley helped me out, like lots of different people, but they would all help me with ideas, and they would be like, well, show me some dance moves or something, and then they would be like, hey, we could turn this into this, and like that's kind of how like my split Jawbreaker came to be, because they were like, well, you can do the splits, we're going to make a move out of this, and so there was a lot of collaboration between trainers, and once I did start it, I started to obviously watch a lot more wrestling, and I'm not ashamed to say that I definitely borrow from what I find on videos, too. I think everybody does.
Sure. How long was it before you had your first match?
I was on an NBA show 6 months into my training. It was a 6-man tag. I believe it was me, Drew Gulak, and Ryan Slater. Lots of foreshadowing there. And versus Kylie Pierce, DJ Hyde, and Johnny Calzone on an NBA show. That was the first match I ever had. But then after that, I didn't have another match until I was about 2 years into training. Just a lot of it being having a hard time getting booked to wrestle. I was getting booked everywhere to manage, and also I broke my hand right before I was supposed to start having matches. I broke, and so that put me out for even a little bit longer.
How did you break your hand?
Learning how to do a head scissors, randomly enough. I was running in. Alex Payne actually was basing for me, and as I was coming in to do it, I just happened to crack the side of my hand into his forearm and broke my thumb and had to have surgery and all kinds of fun stuff.
Wow. Now, when you break your hand and stuff like that, doing like a certain thing, are you more hesitant going in once you get back into the swing of things? Like with that move?
I mean, some people might be. I was more like, okay, the first thing I'm going to do when I can come back is this move, so I'm not afraid of it, just because
right.
It was one of those things that was just such a freak accident. Like,
yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. Now, I'm kind of all over the place here because I haven't seen, like, all of your work or anything, but there's different things that I've seen and I wanted to ask about. The AIW show that you did the tournament in.
Mm-hmm.
How long did you work for AIW before that tournament?
About a year. They were one of the first places that it was actually the first all-women show I ever did was AIW Girls Night Out. I believe 4 was the first one I did, and now we're on 11 and 12 coming up. In March. So I had been working there for about a year, I think, before I did the JT Lightning tournament.
Okay. Now, in that tournament, obviously, you opened a lot of eyes because, again, you're wrestling nothing but guys. And, you know, what was your experience like with that tournament, first off?
It was amazing. The whole tournament, the whole weekend was just such a great experience. I mean, and being one of the first 3 girls they have ever asked to be in the tournament was also something that was just kind of an honor. Felicia Sparks and Beta Scott being the other 2 women that were in it. But then also getting to advance all the way to the semifinals was pretty fantastic too, and getting the opportunity to wrestle somebody like Johnny Gargano and prove that I can hold my own in the ring just as well as the guys can, up to some of the top guys in the professional wrestling circuit right now.
Sure, yeah, and you know, Gargano, they kind of, you two kind of work this, you know, the gimmick that he was scared to hit you and stuff like that, but in reality,
definitely.
How many times have you gone into matches where the guy was scared to hit you?
I don't think I've ever experienced that really, just because I come in pretty stiff myself, so I mean, I don't know, I'll keep hitting you harder if you don't hit me back.
Right. That's good. What was your response, you know, coming off of that tournament? Was there like a lot of, you know, did the phone calls, you know, start getting a lot more frequent or?
Yeah, definitely. My schedule got real crazy right after that, which was also awesome. And it was just a great experience overall. And then I ended up doing quite a bit of intergender work in the last year too.
You wrestled Mia Yim too quite a bit, right?
Mm-hmm. Right at the beginning when I was first starting to have matches. We probably haven't wrestled each other in like a solid year now.
Yeah, you wrestled her in, I believe, Force One, right?
Mm-hmm. I wrestled her in Force One. I wrestled her at RCW. I wrestled her in a couple of CZW NBA shows. I tagged against her on a CZW show. We were all over the place for a while.
What was your experience like working her?
Awesome every time. And I'm like dying to have another match against her because it's just so much easier when the person you're working with is one of your best friends, which she is and always will be in professional wrestling. And you just know each other so much better, and it makes it easier to come up with stuff. I mean, we could probably wrestle a match with, like, not even seeing each other until we were in the ring and be absolutely fine.
Yeah. Now, seeing her, you know, you guys had came up, I guess, around the same time, right?
Mm-hmm. Just about. She's a little, about a year have been in about a year longer than me, I believe.
Okay. But, you know, coming up right around the same time and wrestling kind of earlier in your career, seeing her take off so fast, did that give you, like, a good cue to, like, you know, keep pushing yourself, or, you know, that was not that far off from you getting your own opportunities too?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I always try to use, like, my friends as kind of like an inspiration. Like, if they're doing really well, I want to push myself to be as good as they can be too. I mean, that's kind of a technique I've got from taking dance classes. Honestly, I'll put myself by the person who I feel is the best, so I work to be as good as them. That type of thing.
You got to go to Japan. What was that like?
I did. I was not there long enough. That's my comment always on that. Mia Yim actually helped me get that trip over with Reyna. It was very spur of the moment. She said, I sent them some people's stuff. They liked you. They want you to come. How quickly can you get a passport? And so I scrambled to do all that and was there for about for 3 days and then was on my way back. So unfortunately, I didn't even have time to really get to train with the girls over there, which is what I really want to do. My biggest goals for my upcoming years, hopefully in 2014, is to go international and go back to Japan and actually stay there for an extended period of time so I can train, because that's really what I wanted to do. But getting the opportunity to wrestle over there and to wrestle in, of all places, Corican Hall was such an amazing experience and something so awesome to be fortunate enough to have happened to me at such an early stage of my career.
Right. Now, women's wrestling, especially at least on the indie circuit, has like the fan base is kind of split. You have the people who watch it for the athleticism and for the wrestling, and then the people that it's more or less like I don't know if I should say fetish or exactly how to phrase that, but how do you handle that from your end?
I was saying fetish is a good way to describe it. I mean, you just deal with it. Like, I mean, obviously, I'm all about the women getting equal opportunity, and I want to prove to everybody that we can be pretty and very talented, and that you should appreciate us for both, not just for, hey, look, it's some tits and ass running around out there. But, it is what it is. It's always going to be like that. I'm sure there's certain girls who come to see men's wrestling just because there's guys running around in little tights. So I'm sure it goes both ways in some sense. It's just a lot bigger in the women's wrestling that there's the creepy guys mixed in with the guys that are actually there to appreciate it.
Yeah. The amount of messages and people you must have to block on the social media is probably pretty high, right?
Oh, my God, you have no idea. Every day I get somebody saying something weird.
Yeah, I'd imagine. But, I mean, there's got to be some kind of balance, too, because some of those people, I mean, they are definitely supporting, and I'm sure they're not all completely dangerous. And then there are probably some of the people that are quick to buy pretty much everything you offer them for sale as well, right?
Yeah, there's definitely people who... I absolutely have fans that support me, and I talk to them all the time. Like, my whole thing is just don't be a creep. Like, like, I'm pretty sure today the message I got was just your tits, and I was like, you're blocked. So it's just, don't be weird. Like, I mean, I'm a normal person, too. I deserve some respect, and, like, I have, just buy an 8x10, and you can do whatever you want with it. Just don't tell me about it. Like,
yeah. Yeah, well, you know, like I said, it is to a certain extent support, but yeah, it does, I'm sure, cross the line pretty fast. Now, you've worked a lot of different places, Shimmer and WSU, and there's the other company, BLOW. What would you say is like the difference between these companies, and, you know, how do you like working for them individually?
I can't speak too much for BLOW. I only worked there once. But as far as WSU, Shine, Shimmer, those ones, each one just kind of has its unique flavor, I guess would be the word I'm going to use for that. Like, I like WSU for the uncensored fact, and that you can just have a tag team name that's Chicks Using Nasty Tactics, which is the best acronym to ever hit professional wrestling, in my opinion. And,
right.
And that's cool. And then Shine and Shimmer are more similar in the sense that, like, they're a little bit more serious, and not to say that WSU isn't serious, but that just you get a lot of opportunities with Shimmer to have a lot of international girls come in, and you get to work people that, unless you've traveled to those countries, you may never have gotten a chance to work. Like, I was fortunate enough to work Kana at the last Shimmer taping and have one of, if probably the best match of my career to date. And I would have gotten that opportunity until who knows when without, like, the help of Shimmer. And then Shine, I get to go to Florida, and I feel like they have, like, really strong set storylines there and really make that a big focus. And of course, all of them have awesome locker rooms and awesome girls that are in there, and it's great to be a part of that camaraderie, too.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what it was like working Kana, too, but you answered that question. I on the surface, too, like, I look at the other company, and you said you worked there only once, I didn't know. From a female perspective, do you take offense to that? Like, because, I mean, the way that they named it, yeah, obviously, you know, there's a, like, the connotation or whatever, and is it disrespectful to women's wrestling as a whole?
I mean, I'm not easily offended. It didn't really bother me. Like, I giggled when I heard the name, honestly. I mean, I have a tag team name that is also could be considered a derogatory term towards women, so, like, it is what it is. It's have a name that make, because in all honesty, having a name like that probably makes people look and go, what is this? And then that's a way to get people interested, and it's what the girls show once they get there. That's the part that really matters. It's just the name. I think people got their panties in a bunch over that one a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I just, you know, was wondering as far as, like, the professionalism, you know, the athleticism is trying to be pushed in so many other companies where you actually get the respect you deserve. And, you know, I don't know. What's your thought on the TV product? Do you watch any of that?
I have three jobs, so rarely do I get to watch anything, but what I do see, I'm always a little bit like, whenever I see the women's wrestling, except a couple times I've gotten to see NXT, that usually makes me pretty happy, because the girls down there are getting a chance, but what's up on WWE, and it's just like, oh, we could... The women could do so much more. Like, just let us have a chance. Let us have more than 2 minutes and, like, put some girls that, like, have really trained and really want this, aren't just somebody you saw in a magazine, like, out there. Like, it sucks. But, I mean, I don't know. I feel like the time for change and the time for the indie worker is sort of coming, just because with, like, the men that are already up on TV that have come off the indies, it's got to happen with the women soon, too, you know?
Yeah. I mean, do you think that's the direction it's going? Or, because it's kind of confusing. I mean, there's a lot of times they pushed Kelly for God knows how long. She was, like, their person. And then, and then she pretty much walked away herself. Beth Phoenix walked away herself. Caitlin just left. I mean, what's your thought on, you know, the people who are just pretty much bailing on it. It's some of their biggest names, too.
I mean, I hope it's time for change, and I hope they're going to start, because I know girls who are just as pretty as the models that they have down there, and, like, it's just, like, they're just as pretty, but they can go, like, so just saying that, like, oh, well, we need model-level beauty on our show, and we're not going to find that in the indies is bullshit, like, it's, I think the change is coming, I really just feel it, like, it needs to happen, because people, just like with other sports and everything, like, UFC, for example, or, NASCAR is another example that comes to mind off the top of my head. The women are starting to make a big push, and WWE is going to have to compete with that too.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, you get the feeling like they're trying to do something. They have Sara Del Rey down there training girls, and I don't know who better you could get. So you got to think that they are doing something, but just haven't seen it as far as, like, their, you know, their main shows, their TV products.
Yeah, I mean, it takes time. I'm not expecting it to happen overnight. I'm just hoping that it will happen soon.
Sure. You've had this ongoing feud lately with Christina Von Erie, which you know, turned up a notch at Cage of Death with the skewers and all that. What's your thoughts on this whole feud?
Definitely an exciting feud to be a part of. It's not over yet, and some exciting things are going to happen. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. You know, with the skewers and all that stuff, what's your thoughts on, you know, hardcore wrestling, or is that something you ever thought you were going to, you know, dabble in whatsoever in the past?
When I first started, I was like, that's scary, absolutely not, what he did, like, no. I mean, as you learn more and more about it, there's just, it takes a really special kind of person to be able to do that, and I have so much respect for all of the boys and girls that go out there and do that and put their bodies on the line in that way for the fans. And, like, I think sometimes it's taken for granted just how much, like, they really care about their audience to be willing to do something like that.
Sure. Of the wrestling you've watched, who were you, like, the biggest fans of, as far as, you know, you said early on you watched China, but you got more into watching wrestling. Who do you follow the most or watch the most of, you think?
When I started watching a whole lot of Sara Del Rey. I watched a lot of Kana's matches. I watched a lot of Mercedes Martinez, LaFisto, definitely all of the stuff LaFisto did in CZW. And just that would be kind of the main group of girls. I mean, and then back when I was younger, it was like China and Lita and Ivory are the three I can think of that, like, I really remember from what bits and pieces I could watch.
Do you have a favorite match or favorite few matches that you've watched over time?
The one that always pops into my head immediately is one of LaFisto's matches against Black Keys, where, like, he just beat the crap out of her, but she took it all and, like, took it like a champ, and that match always sticks out for me.
All right. Of your own matches, what's your favorite? I know you kind of hinted at it more or less with the Kana match, but is that it?
Definitely the Kana match, and as far as my intergender matches goes, it's probably a toss-up between the few I just had against JT Dunn and then also against Johnny Gargano. Those would be the intergender ones that come pop into my head right off.
What are some dream matches that you have, people that you really, really want to work and haven't yet?
Definitely Mercedes Martinez. I want to work her so bad somewhere.
Right.
And then I would also love to work Rain. That's another one. But she was going to retire, but then didn't retire, so we'll see.
Yeah.
My other dream match was Sara Del Rey, but then she got signed.
Yeah. What are your goals? Would you like to try to get to the NXT, you know, situation, or is it more, you know, Japan, or what are your goals?
Right now, I guess, like, I really want to go international. Like, that's, like, the biggest thing for me that I'm focusing on right now, but I mean, absolutely, I would want to go to NXT and make it up to the main roster and on to WWE, because realistically, that's the biggest platform we have to show our talent. And if you don't want to go there, then you don't want to utilize the biggest place you have to show it. But I don't know. I always try to look at it as, like, if I don't make it that far, I'm not a failure either, because there's so much else out here, too. And, like, I mean, I would be happy with going to Japan and never coming back, too. And, like, there's just lots of different things. And my whole philosophy on everything is, if I get one person in my lifetime to say, she's awesome, I want to be like her when I grow up, I've done my job and I've been successful.
Right. And, you know, towards that side of things, what would be your advice for, you know, any young girls who are trying to come up and get into the business and train?
Research, find a good school, and be ready to work very, very hard and be very, very sore and get judged worse than you ever were in high school and be under a little microscope for every little move you do, because at the beginning, the girls have it 10 times worse than the guys, getting called, oh, well, she's just here because she's a rat and all that crap that we have to deal with, and you really have to put up with it and earn your respect, and it takes a long time. I wouldn't even say I'm done earning mine, and it's, you just have to be ready to work hard and work as hard as the guys, is my other biggest advice. Don't be like, oh, but I'm a girl, I might break a nail. No, get in there and hit like the guys, kick like the guys, wrestle like a guy. Don't differentiate yourself.
Great advice. More or less, I think I've pretty much hit everything. Is there anything you want to plug or put out there?
Well, obviously, this coming Saturday, I will be at the Flyer Skate Zone for Combat Zone. And then the week after that, I will be at Wrestling is Fun. You can check that out and find out the exact location, because I can't think of it off the top of my head. I know it's in Pennsylvania, at wrestlingisfun.org.
All right. Could you also do a drop for me before you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Whenever you're ready, however.
What do you want me to?
Yakuza Kick Radio is the name of the show. And,
okay,
you know,
cool. I was like,
spin.
What am I saying?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
All right, I got it. Right. Hey, everybody, this is Kimberly, the first lady of the Combat Zone, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
Awesome. So, yeah, thanks for coming on, and love to have you back in the future, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. I'll come back anytime.
Awesome. I wish you all the luck and everything, except for your football team. I'm a Niner fan, so I can't.
Well, sucks for you guys, because we have home field advantage throughout the entire playoffs, so I'll see you in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, you know. See, I actually had to make sure that we won on Sunday night before I actually said, all right, let's do this Wednesday, because there's no way, as a Niner fan, I could have had you guys in the next round without us, in, you know, playing football anymore. I couldn't have done it. I would have had to
I was sitting watching the game going, choke, choke, choke.
Yeah, they're not friendly teams, so.
No, not even in the flight.
Yeah, so, but yeah, like I said, you're welcome back anytime, Seahawk fan or not, so.
Awesome.
But, all right, so have a good night, and like I said, anytime, more than welcome.
Awesome, you too, take care.
All right, good night.
Night.
There you go, that was Kimberly. You know, great to have on. Like I said, super, super talented girl. She's killing it out there right now. So, you know, it is what it is. It's going to keep happening. Her and Christina Von Erie are really turning it up. You know, she just got the skewer treatment from Christina Von Erie, and Saturday she's going to, you know, confront her, and we can only know where it's going to go from there. It's going to be pretty intense, I'm sure, as she said. Gonna play a track, come back. I got lots to rant and rave about tonight. I'm in a Ghetto Boys mood today, so I'm gonna start off with a little Scarface as my first break, and just go from there.
In world news today, officials decree that rapper Brad Jordan, alias Scarface, must be stopped. After being monitored by Secret Service agents for 2 years, evidence leads tobacco and firearms officials to believe that his literally dope lyrics promote drug usage and distribution, degrade women, influence gambling, promote and teach violence, and more importantly, it's influencing our minors and destroying our communities. Officials say he's the lord of underground rap. Once again, him and his music must be stopped.
We got this whole motherfucker on the mission. Now the whole entire world has gotta try to come up with a quick decision. They claim we threat to society, and now they calling on the government to try to make somebody quiet for the bullshit they done to me. Gangsta Nip, Spice, Warden, and Tupac never gave a gun to me. So gangsta rap ain't done shit for that. I've even seen white folks from River Oaks don't get to get. So why you trying to kick them dust up? America's always been known for blaming us niggas, but they fucked up. And we were always considered evil. Now they're trying to bust our only code of communicating with our people. Let's peep the game from a different angle. Matt Dillon pulled his pistol every time him when someone tangled. So why you criticize me for the shit that you see on your TV? That freaks worse than PG. Just bring your ass to where they got me, so you can feel the hand of the dead body.
Nigga, don't believe that song. That nigga's wrong. Gangsters don't live that long.
So now they trying separation and sending black folks in white coats to infiltrate our congregation, tapping into our conversation, taking the message that they get, bring forth wrong premeditation. So David's got a silver man. While listening to Brad, David gets pissed and killed his dad. David Duke's got a shotgun. So why you get upset? Cause I got one. A chest kit, a casket. A nigga got his ass kicked. Shot in the face by a cop closed casket. An open and shut situation. Cop gets got, they wanna blame it on my occupation. If you don't dig me, then nigga, you can sue me. Cause the shit that I be saying ain't worse than a Western movie. Don't blame me, blame your man got it. So you can feel the hand of the dead body.
Nigga, don't believe that song. That nigga's wrong. Gangsters don't live that long. Nigga, don't believe that song. That nigga's wrong. Gangsters don't live that long.
You better free your mind before I free my nine and stop fucking with Detroit of pop. I feel my hot rocks. Bang bang, boom boom, ping ping. I'm the black white boys got a magazine and don't know how to act. I attack and make you vomit. Down with Khaled, I'm through Muhammad. Dewey got a brother, I'm McNair. I'm the illest. Wanna kill this house nigga, John Cornelius. Can you feel this? You punk niggas make me sick. Sucking on the devil's dick, scared of revolution. Need to start douching. Houston is the place. I caught a case. The motherfuckers tried to put a scar on my face, but I bust 2 times to the guts. Through the Reverend Calvin butt. Got a pair of nuts. I started this gangster shit in 86. Now you're dissing me for publicity. Isn't he a hoe to the third degree? Who me? I'm a G that like to scrap a lot. Down with rap a lot. And I can't stop, won't stop. So fuck Bill and Hillary. Ice Cube, it ain't no killing me. Ice Cube, Scarface, dropping it on sellout ass niggas. Doing it like,
nigga, don't believe that song. That nigga's wrong. Gangsters don't live that long. Nigga, don't believe that song. That nigga's wrong. Gangsters don't live that long.
All right, I'm back. Now, you know, I got my energy with me tonight and stuff, so I could, you know, talk about a lot of stuff. Last week, I really, really just did not like the show. Now, I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea and think I'm saying this, you know, because of either one of my guests. You know, Matt Tremont was great. Pondo was great. You know, they both came on, you know, did, but, you know, I expected Pondo to come on and, you know, air out his grievances, you know, with this dude. And, you know, that promoter that beat Mary for the money and, you know, all of that. And I wanted Tremont to come on to promote his, you know, his bet over there. So, you know, there wasn't anything like out of the ordinary as far as, you know, those guys or anything like that. But me personally, like I said, when I was on the air last week, I was just out of sorts. For some reason, my mind was just like wandering. I think it was because I was off that day and I was just hanging around too much. And I just got hit with like a tired spell and I couldn't get my thoughts right. I couldn't get, you know, my speech was all over the place. It was crazy. So I just finished the show going, man, that shit was sloppy as hell. I just didn't like it. So a lot of the stuff, you know, that I would have covered last week, I'll just go ahead and put in this week. And, you know, one of the things that I wanted to talk a little bit about is the New Year's resolution nonsense. New Year's is bullshit. It's a day that, you know, you cross over to another day, another year, whatever, but it's really nothing different. Everyone gathers around in the cold like a bunch of jerk-offs and stares at a blinking ball and then they count and stuff. I don't even watch the fucking ball because for what? I mean, you're going to sit around at 11:59 and look at this shit and your life is going to fucking change when it hits, you know, 12 o'clock. It's fucking retarded, you know? And the problem here is with the resolutions, all right? This is my big issue here. New Year's resolutions are things that you already know that you're fucking up on, that you confess. And it's usually being confessed when you're drunk or some shit like this. And it's usually in a gathering of people, and that's what you usually do. But then you usually go back on these things because you avoided doing those fucking things for 364 days of the year. So to make some kind of proclamation that, oh, now as soon as it hits 12 o'clock, I'm going to fucking change things. These are things you should be confessing to yourself daily and weekly, not to a bunch of other fucking people. These are the things that you should be telling yourself daily and weekly, you know, throughout your life and changing things as you go to make yourself better. You know, like when you're just like, oh, I'm going to stop eating like a piece of shit, and next year is when I'm really going to lock down, as you stuff something else in your fucking face, because you're binging shit that you're talking about getting rid of, or you're, oh, I'm going to really stop drinking after this, and you're just like, give me another shot. Like, you know, people, they find this as an excuse to put a date on their success or a date on their actual, you know, breakthrough with something that they know they're fucking up on to begin with. They continue to fuck up with these things all year round, and they're like, all right, next year, that's the time we're all fucking, and it's just bullshit. If you have any actual goals, you fucking start doing that shit now. You don't wait until the 1st or the 31st or the 28th or the 3rd of the month. This shit don't make no fucking sense. It's bullshit excuses. This is why you get the fucking resolution revolution in the fucking gyms, and then they fucking just pay the rest of the year on memberships they'll never follow through with, you know, when it comes to the fucking, you know, the 8th of a month or whatever. Then they're done with it, but they're locked into a contract or some shit. This is what happens every fucking year. Dumb motherfuckers just, oh, I'm gonna do this when it hits the 1st. You ain't doing shit. You didn't do that shit on the fucking 31st, on the 30th, on the 29th, the 28th. You ain't doing shit. You're putting up a front for a bunch of other people to pat you on the back and be like, oh, that sounds like a great idea, man. Fucking, you know, it's bullshit. It just continues to fucking happen. And it's never going to fucking stop happening because this is the type of fucking assholes people are. And they don't want to face their own fucking their own faults, their own, you know, I don't know, I don't want to call it fears, but, you know, they don't want to face their own mistakes or their own downfall that they're creating. So they just want to put it off and create some kind of, you know, illusion in front of it and say, well, it'll all get better on such and such a date, which is bullshit. You know, you can't get yourself to some, you know, obese state and then be like, well, on the first, I'm going to fucking whip this shit into shape. No, like, there's a long road to recovery, and you should probably not wait till the first, you know, and if you got such a fucking problem with smoking cigarettes that something, you know, popped into your head and said, I should really stop this, how about not waiting till the first to do that shit? Because you're pretty clear in your own mind to know that you need to do it. So to go, oh, well, I have 15 more days of doing this shit that I don't want to do anymore. Well, if you really didn't want to do it, then you wouldn't do it fucking today, tomorrow, or the next day. You know, wait until the fucking first. Douchebags. So, yeah, there's that. Let me see. I got Sirius XM. I got a... For my girl for Christmas, one of the things I got her was a Sirius satellite radio for the truck. And I signed up for the package for it or whatever. If you go on the website and you read, it'll tell you, you know, what you do and do not get for, you know, whichever package. The select package, which I think is like the second, it's like more or less the middle package, I want to say, something like that. That tells you, you go down and, you know, Howard Stern is on Sirius Satellite Radio, which honestly isn't like the reason why I got it. Because for the most part, you know, we're in the truck. We're all in the truck, the kids, everybody. So it's not like we're just going to be rocking Howard Stern every day when I'm going to work. It's, you know, but I'm also not going to not have it because, oh, you know, if we are on a, you know, long trip or something somewhere and the kids aren't, you know, with us or, you know, heading to a race or wherever, you know, we can put that on. I'm not going to have the service that carries Howard Stern and then just not have Howard Stern. So, of course, I'm like, all right, you know, I guess I'll go with the select package. It says right here, I get Howard Stern on there too. So, okay, boom. So I do that. You know, you do the whole thing with them on the phone. And I didn't ask whether they had it or not. I signed up for the select service. Okay, boom, charge the card, this and that. Within 5 minutes, all your stations will be there. And I know Howard Stern is Howard 100 and Howard 101 because I download the shit. You know what I mean? That's what I normally do. And that's the thing is because even with the Sirius service, I'm still going to download the shit because I listen to it on my iPod at work. So even paying for the service, I still need a way for me to listen to it at work. And it's not going to be via massive data plan through a Sirius satellite fucking remote transmitter type shit or a smartphone or whatever. It's not going to be any of that shit. It's going to be in my iPod the same way I'm listening to it on a regular basis now. So anyway, so I'm like, all right, I'll go with the select or whatever and this and that. So I'm sitting there waiting. It's like, yeah, within 5 minutes, the thing, I go Howard 100, boom. This is an unsubscribed channel. Like, what the fuck? 101. This is an unsubscribed channel. I'm like, oh, I ain't do some shit. Turn the thing off, turn it back on. Same deal. So I call him. And I'm like, yo, what's the deal with this? And they're like, oh, what channel are you trying to get? I'm like, you know, Howard 100, Howard 101. Oh, Howard Stern, they say, like, you know, like he's in the next room and shit. Oh, Howard? Yeah. Let me check your package. They go, you know, no homo. And they check the thing and they're like, oh, I'm sorry. That your package doesn't cover Howard Stern. I'm like, how the fuck it? It says on your website. Well, yeah, that's no, it doesn't. You're gonna have to get the all access. So it's like another $4 or whatever. But with the $4, it also gives you the opportunity to listen to it on your computer. Like I could listen to the Sirius satellite on my computer or on a smartphone, a tablet, whatever the fuck. So, you know. It does give you that for the extra $4 or whatever, but they straight up lie to you on the website and be like, yeah, you get that. And they must be waiting by the fucking phone because they'd be like, within 5 minutes, everybody's got to be calling back going, where the fuck's Howard at? Because that's got to be one of their biggest draws to sign up for it. You know what I mean? I mean, this service is awesome between all the different, you know, music channels you can get and stuff. I mean, it covers a lot of ground and, you know, crystal clear reception on 150 channels and shit. I'm not doing a commercial for them because they don't pay me, but you know what I mean? Like, it's good fucking service, but Howard definitely draws millions of people over there. So you would think you'd be a little more clear on the fucking website that select doesn't, they select that shit to not give you. So it's crazy. Let me see a couple other things. Oh, the what the fuck? Wrestle Kingdom 8. This is you know, a show that they do, New Japan does over in Japan, and they put it on like a WrestleMania over there. Now, I had heard after the fact, because I made a comment online saying, you know, these Japan companies absolutely, and I stick by it, need to be able to put on iPay-per-views, and they would make boatloads of fucking money from the U.S. live iPay-per-views for these shows like this. Now, Wrestle Kingdom 8, this shit is, the entire show is on YouTube. You can go watch that entire show on YouTube. It's broken into two parts. Now, from what I've heard, this was broadcast iPay-per-view. And if it was, I wouldn't even know where to find it. So it's obviously horribly advertised. And again, the entire thing's on YouTube within a couple of days, which is, you know, I mean, I guess you can only do so much as far as flagging things or whatever. But YouTube, I think, is pretty easy. If you own a company and the entire show is on the fucking internet, like, not long after, you can get it taken down. But, like, there's no effort to anything. And as far as I'm concerned, if they were to push this show, I mean, the entrances and the amount that they spend on this show is tremendous. Like I said, they treat it like a WrestleMania. I'll get into the entrances in a minute, too. But the thing is, if they really wanted to push this, what they need to do, they work interpromotional with enough companies in the U.S. Now, I know Dragon Gate's not going to be an option because you're talking Dragon Gate and you're talking New Japan. Okay, fine. Grab Ring of Honor. Grab, I mean, I don't think CZW is going to be a platform for that. They're not really interpromotional enough with those guys. Or Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. Or grab anything you can in the U.S. I think running your own show independent of itself is probably a little bit of a stretch and a little much to ask, you know, for New Japan to just run its own show. Because, you know, when they did the thing with Jersey All-Pro, that was still kind of like piggybacked on Jersey All-Pro to help out to run the show. So they kind of need someone else's help to do it. But I would do it where you don't even run a whole show independent of itself. Just bring in your fucking Kota Ibushi, or bring in your Prince Devitt, or bring in one of those guys and have them do something that maybe puts on a match, you know, with some of your top talent. Again, the Young Bucks work the show. I mean, there's a lot of guys that work the show over there that you already have here before they're getting shipped over there. So, you know, what I'm saying is, like, if you bring one of these guys over, you do some kind of thing to show their talent off at the U.S., and then work as an interpromotional thing where it advertises this show in Japan that's going to be live, iPay-per-view, blah, 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 and then heavily publicize it, heavily fucking cover it. And I heard that they did that too, but do U.S. commentary. And it can't be hard for you to find someone that's like a complete Japanese wrestling nut, knows everything that's going on, knows all the angles, knows all the storylines, knows all the wrestlers' names, not like Eric, those guys, and is able to really break it down as it goes and keep everybody up to speed on it. Because once you gather that following and it becomes somewhat of a niche, because a lot of these guys, you know, these fans in the U.S. are big fans of the Japanese style, but it's not really offered to them as readily. It's, you know, it used to be tape trading, and then now it's more torrents and downloading, and you're losing all of that money. Even the people who would be willing to pay for it can't really find it to pay for it. And then it comes down to, oh, what am I supposed to go on High Spots and order a fucking $30 DVD from them in order to fucking watch something that happened 3 months ago? You know, this is the new era of wrestling really goes through iPay-per-view, because it's the same level of doing pay-per-views, only obviously on a smaller scale where you don't have to get some multi-million dollar deal. You don't have to put your company on the line like, you know, ECW, from, you know, a lot of what they've said, you know, pay-per-view did a lot of bad for it, because they spent a whole shitload of money, and if those pay-per-views didn't sell enough, well, you know, they buried themselves. So they invested too much in it. These iPay-per-views, you just got to get your shit with some kind of internet connection, you know, get whatever, you know, they have the different internet, you know, the iPay-per-view feeds or whatever you call it. I don't know all the technicalities to it, but I know if, you know, a couple different U.S. distributors are able to host iPay-per-views with really limited problems and limited difficulties and stuff, pretty fluently do it, I'm sure Japan can pull it off too. And, you know, they just got to get it all together and be able to market it, you know, to the U.S. because you're going to pull in money. I mean, you're going to fucking make a killing. Japan, I mean, they take wrestling so seriously over there. And when you get the product put out at that high of a level, and then the production is at a U.S. type of grade, like this stuff, they had one of the entrances, they had Tanahashi came out with, I don't know if that's his normal song or whatever, but they had the guitarist from, the fuck is that band, Megadeth, or the guitarist or the bass player, one of the motherfuckers from Megadeth and shit, playing the fucking guitar for this dude's entrance, and then walk out and the platform lowers down, and he's fucking, you know, playing air guitar behind the fucking Megadeth dude. And shit like this. I mean, that's immediate huge pop for all the metalheads and stuff out there. They just look like, oh, shit, this fucking... I mean, that stuff that, like, WWE does from time to time, they don't even do that on a regular basis. So you can imagine it's going to find its audience, it's going to find its draw to bring people in for that. Prince Devitt's fucking entrance was awesome. They had people, you know, like the... I mean, I guess you call it like the Undertaker's druids or, you know, whatever you want to call it. The dudes carried the fucking casket out and leaned it up and had fucking Prince Devitt bust out of it with like fucking Carnage paint on, like the Spider-Man Carnage. He had his body painted up, his face, kind of like Venom, but, for, you know, for those who don't know who Carnage is, he's like a more evil, smaller version of Venom and Spider-Man mix type shit, like more evil. So, not like a huge comic dude, but I know that. And he looked like a little fucking Carnage and shit. So he had that shit going on. And he, you know, and him doing that entrance like that all fucking dark and crazy and his paint looked fucking awesome. That, to me, like, really stood out. I mean, it just made you want to see what the fuck was going to happen next. And these dudes went in, put on almost like a half-hour match. The match was fucking awesome. I mean, some of the shit that they do in this match is just fucking crazy. Ibushi does, like, a more or less like a pump handle to a German suplex. They had a bunch of, like, interference-type stuff on the outside. Devitt had, like, a curvatum. Ibushi takes like a powerbomb on the apron that's just fucking nasty. Ibushi pulls off this top rope Frankensteiner that's ridiculous. They're both standing on the top rope, not, you know, middle rope to top rope, fucking standing on the top rope, jumping Frankensteiner. It just looked fucking crazy. Absolutely crazy. Devitt pulls off a reverse brainbuster, looks like he kills him. Sit out last ride powerbomb looked crazy. I mean, the whole shit was just a great match. And, you know, it makes you want to see more of this shit. This is the stuff that, you know, you would see it and just go, man, that was off the fucking chain. Now, again, why you need the U.S. Commentary and stuff is because then you got, like, you know, some dude in a mask comes out with some black flowers and he hands him the shit. And then it's just like, oh, what the fuck? I don't know what the fuck's going on. And I'm sure, I'm sure somebody knows what the fuck's going on. They could be like, oh, that's such and such. Man, they were feuding last month. Look at this shit. You know, I don't know. So he handed him the flowers, and he looked like reluctant to take it, but then he took them, and then he bounced. And I don't know what the fuck that's supposed to mean. But yeah, great match. And like I said, the entrances were crazy. They had like a full percussion band, like, up on the stage just like banging out for like 10-15 minutes, and then like they'd start another match and shit. It was just crazy. And I don't know, like, and another thing too is, now, you know, those who know me and, you know, have listened to a lot of the show, no, I'm not a fan of Chikara and shit. I thought that it was just too goofy with the characters and the fucking ice cream and the goat and an ice cream and a baseball and an ant and a, like, it was too much where I couldn't take it seriously. And there was, you know, a lot of talented wrestling going on, but it was just too goofy, too cartoony, too kid-like. But I honestly do like a lot of character. Like, so many dudes on the indies are just generic fucking wrestlers. Regardless of what they're doing in the ring, their characters are just a dude in fucking underwear and shit. Now, the individuality of a lot of this has come out of it because there becomes, like, this stereotype. And it's just like when Hiro was on and said that a lot of what kept Ring of Honor away from him is because he wore pants. He wore them leather pants and shit. He didn't wear tights. I think that's retarded. I think that's absolutely retarded that everybody's got to wear fucking spandex underwear and shit in order to get fucking taken seriously. That's crazy. I thought Sanjay's fucking black and gold pants was the best look Sanjay ever had. And then it's like, then he goes to, then back in the day he went to, like, fucking tight pants with a like a fucking wagon wheel on it. Shit didn't make no sense. And then he went from that to just like fucking underwear. And it's just like, that's the progression everybody does for the most part. It's like they just go from, here's my creativity, here's my actual gimmick, here's my look, and then, oh, underwear. Okay, now I'm more professional because I'm wearing just fucking shit that hugs my nuts. Shit don't make any fucking sense. It doesn't look fucking good to dudes in the crowd. I guess there's enough dudes that are just like, yeah, you know, that's traditional and that's the way it should be. It's like you probably got some old, you know what I mean? You probably got some different reasons for liking this thing. But to me, I just don't think it's that necessary. I mean, it, you know, people can wear that or whatever, but if every fucking person that walks out there has just got the same fucking drawers on and really no distinguishing marks, nothing distinguishing about their character, then it's ridiculous to me. And, you know, Ibushi coming out, you know, painted up like that looks fucking crazy. When Rory came out of Cage of Death painted up like that, shit looked crazy. He should have done that for a lot more of his career because, I mean, it really popped him out there. It made him stand out a lot. I mean, the shit that, obviously, the same dude that did Rory's paint, Joker. The way his paint looks fucking amazing. And he does amazing fucking paint work. I mean, for a while, he just went out there without it. And he's still a badass wrestler and all that shit, but it draws attention to his character as a whole as soon as you see this dude walk out there with this crazy fucking face paint. And then, you know, you want to pay more attention to what they're doing in the ring. I don't think everybody should run around like the fucking Insane Clown Posse with their face painted. I'm just saying, like, individuality in character, to me, goes a long way. There's obviously limits, and I think, like, a Chikara type shit exceeded those limits doing what they did, because it's just like, no one's fucking normal now. Okay, now everything's fucked up, you know? You look at the shit, and you're just like, what the fuck is going on here? Check the calendar. God damn it, what day it is? But, you know, I don't know. I just do enjoy a certain amount of individuality, and I just feel like, you know, that whole thing with Prince Devitt looked fucking awesome. So that's just, like, my 2 cents on that right there. But, yeah, like I said, that goes for all Japan. You know, all the companies in Japan. Now, they don't have to all do monthly iPay-per-views, but at least they're big shows. You know, like, they're big shows in DJW could very well get over with the deathmatch scene over here. I mean, the deathmatches in the U.S. are very, very limited. CZW still hasn't really worked out doing a live iPay-per-view of their Tournament of Death. It's still a delayed thing because it's out in DJ's backyard and shit, which is understandable. You can only do what you can do. But in Japan, I mean, they're still running fucking light two matches in buildings and shit like that, so they could probably work out the, you know, logistics of that. Once it's been out there for a couple of days or weeks or whatever, that shit's online and it's fucking free. You capitalize on the people that want it right now, right here, when it's going on, you can get that shit going. Now, I know that the time difference is going to be a big issue with, you know, some of these things, but at least, you know, earliest or normal time for fucking people in the U.S. would be, you know, that would suffice, I think. Yeah, I know they can't really work it out completely, so, you know, it lines up where it's a good time for them over here and a good time over there. But, you know, there should be some kind of compromise that you could work out where they actually do make money off of this shit, because I just feel like there's a lot of money being left on the table with Japan wrestling and U.S. consumers. You know, the days of waiting for a DVD to come across that's, you know, a month after the thing came out is really behind us. It's old hat, as they say. Let me see. What else do I got? WWE. I was reading this shit that they said something. Ryback is getting heat for injuring Dolph Ziggler. Now, here's the article here that I read on, what the fuck is it on? Wrestling News Source or whatever the fuck. It says, it's being reported that Ryback once again has heat on him backstage after delivering a particularly stiff clothesline to Dolph Ziggler during last night's taping for Superstars. Ziggler has reportedly suffered a back concussion and will be forced to take time off once again. It's being reported that one of the biggest reasons why WWE officials have killed Ryback's push is because there have been so many complaints of him not being able to work safe in the ring. So that's what they posted there, and I don't know what the fuck the truth is, you know, behind that. But that's not what drew me in half as much as these motherfucking comments from these motherfucking people on the internet. Here, let me just read some of this shit. Here's the top couple of comments. Isn't that the point of wrestling, to wrestle? Dolph is one of my favorites, and I hate is in all caps, hate Ryback, but if you become a wrestler, shouldn't you plan on, you know, fighting? Then the next thing is I say stick Mason Ryan in there with him and let Mason rip his head off. And then two comments down, it says, LOL, I guess Ziggler has learned not to mouth off again, huh? And then, what the fuck? And then it says, Ryback and Swagger are the stiffest, and they both cause injury. I don't know. I don't know how to handle these people, these fans that you know, voice their opinions in a way like this, that I just can't handle it. Like I said, I don't know or honestly give a fuck what the actual truth is. I mean, if Ziggler got hurt from Ryback, I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine that's what's actually going on, is that he's just legit hurting people and this and that. Ziggler fucking murders himself bumping all over the place. I mean, that's for fucking starters. Now, I don't know that he injures himself just doing that shit, but he works a very, very reckless fucking style. And, you know, I mean, he was a heel taking fucking crazy face bumps. So, like, when he would take the monkey flip, he would take a monkey flip into a fucking front bump. You know what I mean? Like, he did that extra rotation just to fucking face plant off that shit as a heel. So, I mean, he's just one of those type of guys that works a high-risk style, and I think he's fucking awesome, super entertaining. But obviously that comes with a risk. And, again, I don't know if it's Ryback's fault that he got hurt or what actually happened. I didn't even see the shit. But I just think it's funny how fans fucking respond to that shit. It's fucking dorks. I just can't stand that shit. Let me see what else. As far as WWE, you know, going into Royal Rumble coming up, so I am paying a little more attention. Like I said, the Wyatt thing with Daniel Bryan, I had wanted that shit to happen last WrestleMania. You know, I came on the show and said I thought that was going to happen. People were like, no way, he's a face, that's crazy. And, I just honestly think it would work, and I think it's working now. I watched Raw, and I think it worked perfect. I think, you know, him just being completely ruthless and really kind of blocking out the crowd, not even reacting to them, and just going wild and shit, I think that works well. There's been some rumors that, like, they're going to do this and then by WrestleMania turn him and have Bray Wyatt versus Daniel Bryan. I don't agree with it. I mean, if that's what they're doing, I'm not saying they're not doing that. I'm just saying I don't agree with that decision. I think they should actually work this longer than that. That really only gives them, 3 months, if that. I honestly think that they should work this, 4 or 5 months, 6 months, something like that. They should work the Daniel Bryan and the Wyatt family gimmick. I think that could work really, really well, a little bit more long term. And then, unfortunately, you can't do the big payoff at Mania because it's not going to wind up there. Again, if you did it, I don't know if you want to go that far, but if you did it back at Mania last year, you could have stretched it and maybe paid off in SummerSlam or somewhere, give you, months in between. But either way, I like it. I like the direction they're going. I think it's really cool. The Wyatt's gimmick, I really think, is one of the best things on TV right now. The way that they're working it is just fucking awesome. The promos, the work. Brody's fucking awesome. Luke Harper's fucking awesome. The other dude's all right. I don't think he's anywhere near as talented as Brody. Brody's really the star as far as those two goes. And I think Bray Wyatt's talented too. Definitely the way he pulls that gimmick off is just unbelievable. And Daniel Bryan could only be a huge, huge asset to that whole gimmick coming together. I kind of stopped watching for a while, so I really can't even – I don't know how it exactly tied in. I know Kane came back as, like, the corporate Kane or whatever. But having one of the last things happen where they took him out so he can go film the movie and, said that he was out, he was injured, and this and that. When he came back, I don't know how much, how much loose ends did they tie up with the Kane thing, because – now, his old partner is with them, and you would think that they would do some kind of tie-in with that, which is why I was thinking, too, this is, it all seemed to make perfect sense for me when they did that. It was like, boom, Kane fucking gets drug out, this and that. The next thing you know, Daniel Bryan ends up, when they split them up, it would have made sense. But I stopped watching enough of it, so I really don't know what they missed as far as tying that together, but I don't know. Also watching Cody and Goldust team up. They really got a great thing going on there. I got to say, too, that Cody absolutely re-energized Goldust and gave him, a second wind of his career, I think. He was really not doing anything for a while. And coming back and teaming up with his brother, man, that fucking dude is working just amazing in the ring. I mean, he's always been good, but I don't think at this age that he'd be doing that level of competing right now if it wasn't for teaming up with his brother. I think this is the best possible thing that could have happened to him. Brock Lesnar doing what he's doing, just fucking launching Mark Henry around, gave him some time off TV, doing the whole break your arm gimmick. I've grown to really like Brock's fucking work because, he's probably the strongest fucking guy in wrestling. The way he just fucking manhandles people, and he has a very, very intimidating presence. He's fucking huge. And he really gives you, I don't know whether he does or doesn't, but he really gives you that fucking feeling like he doesn't give a shit about the other guy in the ring. He seems like he's trying to fucking, maybe not legitimately trying, but doesn't give a fuck if the other guy gets hurt or just doesn't give a fuck. He seems like a bad fucking dude that, You know, I don't know. It just works. That suspension of disbelief type thing works really well with Brock Lesnar. And maybe he is a dickhead, and maybe he doesn't like, you know, maybe he doesn't really care about what happens to the other guy. I don't know. But what I'm saying is he's believable. He's very, very believable. He's an absolute fucking beast in the ring. And, yeah, so I'm enjoying it. And then I just heard that Caitlin apparently worked her last match there, and she more or less walked away from it and said she wants to try other, you know, do other things. So I really don't know what it is that she's, you know, going to do instead or next or what the case is. I would imagine it's not wrestling whatsoever because, you know, having the WWE or, you know, at her fingertips and everything and doing it. And, you know, she was women's champion and everything else. I wouldn't think that you would leave there to go to do any other type of wrestling. I don't know. You know, Kelly did the same kind of thing. She left there, went just to make some fucking modeling money and, you know, do whatever she's doing now. But, you know, I guess you get that money and it could go a long way if you wanted to. So that's, yeah, it's just, you know, a couple of my little two cents, just watching a little bit of the WWE because I haven't watched very much of it. And it seems like they've completely swapped out the Sin Caras, right, for the more talented one. And now it's crazy because they got him working on Del Rio, which from what I had heard, the initial idea was for when they did bring Sin Cara in, Mystico, was to feud him with Del Rio or to be feuding him with Del Rio. Because you know, apparently they had a big feud in Mexico or whatever. Again, I could be fucking it up because I don't know that much about the product. But and I think what happened is like Sin Cara was constantly getting hurt and then constantly botching things where he was way behind what they expected him to be. And I think they wanted both guys to peak at the same time. So by the time they were at the peak where they were doing everything they wanted with Del Rio, Sin Cara was in and out and in and out and doing nowhere near what they wanted him to. So that's what happened. And, you know, and now they're at the point where they're kind of declining Del Rio. And now they're kind of trying to raise up Sin Cara with the, I think it's Unico now. And, yeah, it just seems like the time's completely lined up weird. So now, I guess they could try it again on a lower level on the card and then see if they can get it right this time with a different guy in a mask. But, yeah, that's what's up there. I'm going to take another break. I got to talk about some football. I want to go over that round table thing. And, yeah, and that's, I think, about that. And then, you know, quick run through on the CZW show that's going to happen on Saturday. So let me take another break. Like I said, I'm on a Ghetto Boys theme tonight, so this is going to be a Bushwick bill. I'm a huge fan of Bushwick, and definitely the Little Big Man album. One of my favorite albums of all time, and hugely slept on. People don't give the Ghetto Boys enough credit, because those dudes were just as, in my opinion, just as influential as like an NWA. And I'd say, you know, probably more hardcore than NWA was, too, because they were more down south and not as noticed. They didn't become mainstream rappers for the most part. You know, Bushwick Bill, Scarface, those guys, Willie D, definitely didn't. But, you know, Bushwick being on Martin real quick, that's about, like, the most exposure you've seen them get. But yeah, I mean, they were a big, big thing, but never revered as high as like an NWA. Of course, like I said, more mainstream stars came out of NWA with Dre and Cube and all that. But I think still the Ghetto Boys are hugely influential on hardcore rap and gangster rap as a whole, because these dudes were ruthless. And yeah, Bushwick, like I said, Little Big Man was a really, really slept on album. Love it. This track's called Stop Lying. Check it out.
Why you lie about that bitch you said you fucked last week? You could've bought the funky hoe cause yo the pussy was cheap. Me and her been fucking daily since the time we met. You mean to tell me you ain't fucked that old dumb bitch yet? Get yourself a new approach and stop your lying and shit. You couldn't fuck her so
she never sucks your dick. I ain't simple-minded, nigga, put your lies on the shelf, cause you ain't satisfying me or your goddamn self. Let me give you a for instance with this kid named Chris, who used to say he fucked the bitch because she gave him a kiss. Stupid, silly motherfucker with his crotch in his hand, telling dirty bed stories to a full-grown man. I had to stop him in his tracks and had to put him in check, cause he was getting out of hand and he was getting a wreck. Went and bought the boy some pussy, nigga, fucked it up. Gave the trap a 20 spot, she gave the shit right back. But when he came out the room, I had to shut Chris up, cause I'll be damned if he ain't tell me he and she ain't fucked. You a faggot if you stick your dick head in shit, but you a pussy if you sit and tell a lie on your dick. So check it. Was a brother known for fucking a bitch. Used to leave with my rubbers and come back with a itch. Even Kevin started lying when the girls got low. When we asked if he fucked, he ain't never said no. He just laughed and told us that the job was done. So we took it for granted and never questioned one. Now they're sweating me, I'm fucking everyone he's had or he claimed he had. And it's just too damn bad that many brothers must resort to telling lies on Jim. Over and over again, I've seen many of them trying to front like they be macking Bushwick the Mac. And any bitch that you'll attract will attest to that. Too short for short, fucking just long and stiff. And a pocket full of bullets for the niggas who rip. But you a faggot if you stick your dick head in shit. But you a pussy if you sit and tell a lie on your dick. So check it. Lot got it good and we be fucking shit up. Too smooth to be forgotten, yo, they must want more. Where the bathroom, kitchen table, sink on the floor, so check it. Give your cousin a call or something. Take it from Long Dick Bushwick Bill. Fucking bitches every day with a 12-inch kill. Like Monique, a typical runaround ass freak, who used to act like she was it but kept her ass in the street. Used to front on Bushwick Bill like she was oh so sweet. But now my record's doing good and yo, she's under my sheet, so check it.
All right. So yeah, football happened quite a bit. Let me see. Let me just find something real quick. I was very, very happy with this weekend's football. I went down. Let me just just bear with me for 1 minute. I passed all of this part here. I'm always way behind the ball on what I'm... Okay, yeah, that's what I was looking for. All right, so Saturday started off with a complete collapse on the Kansas City Chiefs side of things. They played the Colts, and like I said, these two teams were... And I thought the Chiefs were going to pull it out, but these two teams were both dangerous teams you didn't want to see in the playoffs. So someone was going to be completely caught off, and that was the Chiefs. It started out with being the Chiefs with the complete burial of the Colts. I mean, they put up 31 points in the first half and to the Colts 10 points in the first half. So, you know, they were up 28 points at one point and completely allowed the Colts to just take over. I mean, they did all they were doing with Jamal Charles out. Like, dude went out. He was their lead rusher and, you know, one of the best rushers in the league. He went out, and they were still crushing Indianapolis. And all they had to do was stay strong, stay consistent, and just not make mistakes and just run the fucking clock. And they didn't do that. They allowed a 28-point comeback, and the Colts end up, you know, going on and winning. And, you know, I mean, Andrew Luck, 443 yards, 4 touchdowns. I mean, the dude was allowed to come the fuck back. T.Y. Hilton with 224 fucking receiving yards and 2 touchdowns. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, you allow that type of shit to happen, man. And Luck did everything that they allowed him to do. Any avenue that they tried to give him, he fucking took that shit and ran with it. So, fantastic. You know, that's what happens. Playoffs, that's all you get is one chance. In the next game, the Saints went into Philadelphia and beat the faggot-ass Eagles 26-24, making me very, very happy because I hate the fucking Eagles. So, this allowed me an opportunity to make a post I was very happy about. I wrote, and I quote, "Ha ha ha, fuck you, Eagles. Now all you dickhead fans can go gather around your statue of a fictional sports hero and blow each other in between rounds of your one-word spelling bee until next season." And, you know, so obviously, you know, making reference to the Rocky statue, and then, you know, they always do the E-A-G-L-E. So that's their one-word spelling bee and shit, and more or less blowing each other in between that. So, of course, you know, I got a bunch of, you know, response and stuff like that, which, you know, I expected. What's weird, too, New Jack is a weird fucking dude. At some point, he liked the status, and then, like, a half hour later, he unliked it and shit. And I think he's a Philly dude, too, so maybe, like, he thought it was funny, but then it made him mad or something. That motherfucker's bipolar. Anyway, so, you know, some people like to comment this and that. This chick, Joanne Hutchinson, who's actually at some point or another listened to the show, and, you know, fellow CZW fan and shit like this, she pops up. And she says this, and I quote, "Well, I would like to say I'm from Philly, and I'm so not like those asshole bandwagon jumpers, as I was born an Eagles, Flyers, Phillies fan, and I'll die one, LOL." So I just responded, "Well, you can meet the rest of them by the statue, LOL." And this motherfucker unfriended me immediately. That shit cracked me up. That was the funniest fucking thing in the world to me, because fuck you, motherfucker, because as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to speak my mind, whatever the fuck I feel, however the fuck I feel. This is what I'm about. I mean, I love to talk shit, and I love to just voice my fucking opinion. Now, thing is like, I didn't say shit about bandwagon fans. So I don't know where she read my status and went, "I just need to let them know that I'm not a bandwagon fan." I don't give a fuck if you're a bandwagon fan or not. I said, all you dickhead fans. So maybe she interpreted that as the dickhead fans are clearly the bandwagon ones, and I'm not. No, I mean all you motherfuckers can go gather around the statue and blow each other in between your fucking one-round spelling bee till next season. So apparently she didn't get it, and then when I clarified it, she deleted me, which just makes my motherfucking day. That shit was fun. The thing with me, too, is I'm a little different. Now, actually, another thing I'd like to just put out there real quick is I actually reached 6 months of sobriety since last week's show, and I'm very, very proud of that. Now, I'm a different dude than like a Drake Younger, who's, you know, he's my boy, and I respect him very much, and you know, he's definitely a huge inspiration as far as, you know, what he did and then what I went ahead and did and stuff like that. So, I mean, I give him all the credit in the world, and I mean, the you know, leaps and bounds that he's come since then. I mean, that dude is, you know, he's awesome, but his level of positivity is different than what I do. Me being positive just means that I'm happy in my own life. That's how I carry myself. It's like I'm just happy with my own shit, and I'm positive about things by being, you know, realistic and at the same token, just trying to be happy about things and, you know, and not letting shit get me all pissed off and not, you know, really getting mad about anything like that. And, you know, I got nothing against the way that he does things. That's fine. But it's just, that's just never going to be me because that's never the way I've ever been. I mean, that dude is just one of the happiest, most positive people you're ever going to meet. And that's awesome. But my shit is a little different. So I could happily tell someone to go fuck themselves. I can, when I wrote that shit, I'm laughing my ass off. I'm telling all you motherfuckers to go blow each other, and I'm happy as shit. I'm not mad. See, sometimes when you see these posts, that, oh, this motherfucker's all fired up. Not really. I'm enjoying myself, you know? And my thing is this, man. You only have one chance to get your fucking word out there. As early as most recent as tonight, I stopped by ShopRite to go get apples because everybody knows I'm an apple enthusiast. And so I went by there to go get some apples, man. And I'm picking out a couple of my apples and stuff. And I see this lady walk up with an old-ass man. I got to only, you know, imagine that that was his daughter. You know what I mean? And dude's got to be like 80-something years old. And, you know, he walks up and he asks her, you know, how many apples should we get? And she's like, four, we should get four. He goes, four, that's a number. And that's, to me, like, it just says more to me than, like, just randomly hearing that shit. Yeah, just like a quick process through my mind. Like, that dude, he might have been like a chatty motherfucker back in the day. Like, he might have said a whole bunch of shit that made a lot of fucking sense, or maybe he had some wit. You know what I mean? Maybe he was funny back in the day and shit like that. Like, that was kind of like his way of somewhat joking, but, like, even his ability to conversate was so limited. At that point, you're walking around asking somebody half your fucking age how many fucking apples you could have. And then they tell you it ain't no issue with that. And then you turn around and, you know, your snappy comeback is, well, that's a number. And to no reaction whatsoever. Like, it's not like his daughter's like, you and your numbers. You know, like, that was it. And that's a good chance if you make it that far in life. That's going to be the level of your communication. Is asking somebody motherfucking how many apples you can get, and then the most you can get out of yourself with some shit like that is your response and stuff like this. So my thing is, as long as I can talk shit and as long as I can speak my motherfucking opinion, I don't give a fuck who likes it, who doesn't like it, who would even mean shit to. I'm gonna fucking talk my opinion. I'm gonna talk my shit. Well, as long as I can, because there could very, very well be a day where I cannot longer talk. I can no longer talk shit. Now, I don't go as far to say, like, I have no regrets. I don't want to ever have regrets, or I'll live without regret, because I don't think that's the right way to put the statement that a lot of people try to put out there that way. I think you just can't leave shit on the table. You can't leave shit on the table in the future going, I wish I would have said that. Man, I wish I would have said how I really felt. That's the shit I don't want. I don't want to go through life thinking I should have said that or I should have told them the real deal. I just try to go out there and say the fuck I feel, because eventually you ain't going to be able to. And when it comes down to it, whether they gave a fuck or whether they didn't give a fuck, they know where you stand at the end of the day. And that's what's up. I mean, when you're a kid, you're too small for anybody to give a fuck what you say, and half of it's just viewed as nonsense. You know what I mean? Just like, just look at him. He don't even know the fuck he's saying. And then when you get old, it's the same shit. You get old, it's like, look at that girl, crazy old motherfucker just babbling some shit over there. There's that middle window where you could actually talk some kind of logic to what you're seeing around you, and whether people listen to you or give a fuck, that's your opinion. You actually get to put it out there, and someone might reflect on him. Someone might look at it and go, got something there. Or, you know, fuck that. He just bashed my shit. Whatever it is, that's something that I take a little bit of pride in, because, hey, man, that you only have that, you only have that window to get your words out there. And I don't know. That's just my view on that. And, you know, and the thing is like I said that, and, hey, motherfuckers hate it, delete me, whatever, fine. Now, also, let me also elaborate, too. Eagle fans, I hate these motherfuckers because even during that game, fucking dude got injured. They're booing out there. Fucking booing injuries. After the game, there's a fucking video online. Now, albeit the fucking dude was pretty brave. He was in a fucking Saints jersey and the fucking Saints beat the Eagles, and he's in the fucking Eagles stadium going, woo! But anyway, fucking right on camera and shit. Fucking Eagle fan spits in his fucking face. And that motherfucker be spitting teeth out. Now, I mean, there'd probably be half a stadium beating fucking life out of my shit. You know what I mean? You probably wouldn't make it out surrounded by Eagle fans fighting one of them. But still, the type of dirty motherfuckers that are just spitting in people's faces because they don't like the motherfuckers rubbing it in. Like, you just can't handle life. And it's mostly just dirtbag fans. You know, motherfuckers will be at a motherfucking ice cream parlor and they're chanting the fucking E-A-G-A-E. That's a motherfucker. Get your ice cream. Get the fuck out of here. No one want to hear your spelling. I mean, I just can't stand them fucking fans. That's why, like, I never really had any, like, grudge towards the Eagles because they ain't ever won shit. So it's not like I got, that reason to be mad at them and shit. Because, like, I hate the fucking Cowboys because the Niners and Cowboys had all sorts of fucking beef back in the day in the playoffs in the 90s and 80s. You know, so obviously I got reason there. I hate the fucking Giants. Just Giants and Niners had a bunch of fucking heat back in the days, too. The Packers, same shit, bunch of playoff heat. Eagles I hate because their fans are dickheads. I mean, honestly, they walk around acting like fucking jerk-offs. You know, I can't say enough about it. And, hey, man, I'm friends with a couple people who are Eagle fans, and I like everything else about them. But as soon as they turn on that Eagle fandom, shut the fuck up. I can't stand this shit. It's fucking irritating. Garbage-ass bullshit team. Fucking, and they were all fucking backing that dog-killing bitch. And the next thing you know, this motherfucker goes out, and they're like, oh, okay, yay, the other guy. Fuck that guy anyway. It's like they got no loyalty. They got nothing, man. They fucking, now they're fucking full. They're down with this dude. He's the best thing ever. But he goes out, they'll jump on the next fucking bandwagon. They don't give a fuck about anything. There's no loyalty to anything. Riley Cooper, their fucking wide receiver, is talking about, I want to kill all the niggers. Like, this fucking guy was screaming at you at country concerts. Next thing you know, he's catching passes, and they're like, fucking yeah, Riley Cooper. Like, these motherfuckers are stupid. I mean, there's no like, oh, yeah, that guy's a dickhead. There's really no repercussions, or there's no, like, they don't give a fuck what you did. You could drown a dog. You could try to kill a race or want to kill a race. These motherfuckers are like, I don't know, if he threw a touchdown, I'm good with it, though. I mean, it's just, these people are, that's why I took a lot of joy in these motherfuckers losing. But anyway, like I said, I got that block from Facebook shit for saying faggot-ass Eagles. And that was when I said I wanted them to win a game. I said I need the faggot-ass Eagles to win. And I got blocked from Facebook for 24 hours. And that got labeled as hate speech. And it really only pertained to the word faggot because they consider that hate speech on homosexuals, I'd imagine. But that didn't even pertain to homosexuals. That just pertained to, like, I was dissing the Eagle fans. Because when it comes down to it, if you make a statement like that or something like that, you're not necessarily bashing homosexuals. I mean, you could break it down to some fine level and say, well, you're calling them a faggot, and that pertains to a homosexual, and you're saying that's a bad thing. It's like, no, that's not, I mean, you're overanalyzing things, because as far as I'm concerned, you know, when I say that they need to go blow each other in front of their fictional statue and, you know, chant this fucking stupid Eagle thing, that's not hate speech. I mean, that seemed a lot more aggressive than just saying I need to faggot as Eagles to win. But this is what I'm saying. Like, all of a sudden words get singled out, and next thing you know, it's just like, well, that word was in there, must be hate speech. Well, no, you're not even reading the sentence to figure out that I said I wanted them to win the fucking game. Like, you know what I'm saying? And it just becomes, that's part of the problem with, like, America and the censorship and stuff like that, is they'll just find one word out of an entire statement or a sentence or a song or a movie or a concert or an interview, and they will just fucking base someone off of that. And I think that's bullshit. You know, that's why everybody's got to make fucking apologies in Hollywood and everywhere else, because they just go, he said that word. What was it in, you know, what was the, you know, in what context? Oh, it doesn't matter. You offended somebody. Like, get the fuck out of here. It just shit like that annoys me. You know, you can go way, way, way fucking worse. I've been telling fucking IWA Deep South fans to drink bleach and shit on the internet on a regular basis lately, because they just, I don't know, they just really get on my nerves. They got those dudes that just stab each other with box cutters, and they swear that's the coolest spot ever. And they'll tell you, like, well, if it happened in CCW, you would have loved it. Like, I'm 35 years old. I don't give a fuck where it happened. Stabbing with a box cutter isn't going to entertain me or pop me and shit. Get the fuck out of here. And he says, no, you're just fucking blind CZW fan. It's like, no, you're a fucking idiot. And that shit gets over with you, and then you can watch every tournament of death and find no entertainment value. Then who's biased? It's not me. That's just a shit company. So anyway, but I could tell people to drink bleach, and that's not hate speech. But if I say the word faggot, then whoa. Get them off of Facebook. It's just, it's retarded. Absolutely retarded. Anyway, this roundtable thing. Oh, no. Shit, I didn't even finish football. Motherfucker. So anyway, yeah, the faggot ass Eagles lost. Next day, the Chargers beat the Bengals, which is, goddamn, that was surprising to me. The Chargers are a sneaky ass team, man. They finished the season at 9-7, you know, only 4-4 away. I mean, just not a team to me that looked convincing, but they did pull a lot of big wins, you know, down the stretch, and got them squeaked into the playoffs for beating the Bengals, man. I didn't expect that at all. And yeah, so they're going on. The Niners went in, 1 second left, beat the fucking Packers. In Green Bay, Kaepernick wearing a short sleeve shirt, fucking no sleeves. They're talking about the cold's going to kill us. We can't fucking do it. Can't do nothing about it. Kaepernick rushed for 98 yards, threw for 227. You know, not the biggest throwing, you know. Not the most passing yards in the world. But we did enough to make it happen. Crabtree was beastly with 125 yards. Our defense just continues to fucking pound and pound and pound and really make big plays. We were doing our thing over there. You know, holding Aaron Rodgers to under 200 yards. In the first quarter, we only put up 6 points because we weren't able to convert touchdowns on either one of our scoring attempts. Only came away with 2 field goals. But in that first quarter, we came away with 6. They had 6 yards in that first quarter. That's what I'm talking about, man. That's the fucking team you got to watch out for, is a team that can hold you to 6 yards in a fucking quarter. That's what's up. So watch out for that shit. And another motherfucking thing that happened the night before that, had Ric Flair go in and visit these guys in the locker room. So this is my favorite clip right now that I pulled.
Woo! Go 49ers! Woo!
Absolutely. And, yeah, so that's what's going on. And now we're talking about divisional playoff round. This is what's up right here. And we got the Saints up against the Seahawks Saturday, and that's the 4:35 game. Obviously, gonna go into Seattle. So, you know, the Saints—they're a pretty tough team, but Seattle at home is a motherfucker. So they obviously got to fight against the current right there. But anything's possible, man. Arizona Cardinals beat the Seahawks at home. They're not the toughest team in the NFL. People can beat the Seahawks at home. It just isn't easy. So we can see what happens there. Obviously, the Seahawks are favored there. You know, if I had to put my money somewhere, I'd say the Seahawks, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the Saints surprise them because the Seahawks pretty much expect to win at home. And they've had a lot of close calls, man. They were down 21 points to the fucking Bucks at home before they came back and whoop on the Bucks' ass. But, you know what I mean? Anything could happen any given Sunday or Saturday in this instance. The Colts and the Patriots line up. Old kind of rivalry type game, but this time without Peyton Manning. Now you got Andrew Luck going up against Tom Brady and them. And, you know, Tom Brady is never to be slept on, especially in fucking New England, in the playoffs, man. He is not a joke. And Bill Belichick knows how to fucking coach his ass off, especially, you know, towards the end of the season, December, January. That's what's up. So we'll see what's going on. But like I said, the Colts are one of those teams you do not want to see in the playoffs. They played their ass off. I don't really know if they can outdo what they did last week. Hopefully they didn't put it all out there and come up short this week. But, I mean, I guess we'll have to see. Sunday, we got the Niners at the Panthers. Now, we lost to them last game that we played them during the season. We lost 10-9. We put in 3 field goals. They put in a touchdown and a field goal. Technically, we had more scoring. We had more scoring opportunities. We only came up with 3 points each time. We converted one of those to a touchdown or stopped their one touchdown from being a touchdown. We would have won the game. It was the only loss this year that I actually felt good about. You know, we lost that game, and I still, after the game, was like, I'm fine with that. If we only allowed 10 points to the other team, hey, man, that's a game. And we didn't have fucking Alden Smith, Michael Crabtree, or Vernon Davis in that game, who were all playing on Sunday. So it's going to be a fucking game, and these Niners aren't to be slept on. And I mean, that's for sure. So, and if you have to ask Ric Flair, I mean.
Woo! Go 49ers! Woo!
Yeah. Chargers at Broncos. I think the Chargers have been overachieving to this point. I mean, for them to go and sneak the Broncos would be another amazing thing. I think they actually snuck one against them during the season. I can't see them doing it again. If they do, I mean, shit, good for them. But I just can't imagine the Chargers keep this roll going. The Broncos are a very high-powered offense. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But at least for now, I got to think that the Broncos are going to go pull that. So that's that. All right. Let me hit this this ultraviolet roundtable thing up real quick. It was a roundtable. It had... You know, it obviously covered CZW as its topic, and it had was moderated by Brett Lauderdale, who seems to be the moderator or interviewer of every fucking indie everything these days. And you know, I hate his fucking guts, so obviously I hate to see him on anything or hear his fucking stupid voice, but... Even taking that bias away, I can just tell you he's horrible at it. He's fucking horrendous at it. He doesn't really ask follow-up questions that you would expect someone to fucking ask, you know, during these type of things. He misses a bunch of shit. I mean, I'd imagine they give him some kind of script so, like, he knows what he's supposed to ask. And I can imagine the scripts are kind of fucked because there's just always a lot of questions left off when it comes to his interviewing. And it's just a very bad moderator. So anyway, it's Lauderdale, and then it's Derek Sabato. I know a lot of people don't know who the fuck that is. It is John Dahmer, and it is Greg Excellent. Now, just a quick, you know, rundown on all four of these guys. Derek Sabato is a guy who he ended up being a ref, but apparently he did some, as he calls it, booking and a bunch of other stuff, and he's just a bitter fucking douchebag. I've had interaction with this dude in the past, too, and he just came off, especially, you know, even when I had my little online thing with him, is he's just a dickhead. He's just a bitter dickhead that acts like he deserves some kind of credit. He wants to be known. He wants some kind of credit and his name out there and people to recognize him, but nobody knows who the fuck he is and no one gives a shit. I mean, you might recognize him as a ref or here and there, but he's really nobody and he never has been. And that's something that bothers him. It bothers him very, very much. And you could tell throughout this whole thing, if you ever listen to his thing on the Mike and Tom show, you can tell that he did an interview there, and you can tell on that too. Same deal. He has an overinflated importance. He thinks he's worth far more, and he's far more important than he ever was. And you know, and I'll go further into that as we talk a little bit about this. John Dahmer, I mean, this guy never got enough credit. I mean, he was the guy who was the head trainer for a long, long time in the CCW school. He was always a workhorse. I mean, for the most part, they kept him down the bottom of the card and, you know, had him work with his students and stuff. And, you know, he did very well there, but he, you know, he always got over with the like big pop moves and stuff, and he really knew how to pop the crowd. And, you know, like I said, humble enough to just work down the bottom of the card and help elevate his students more so than, like, get himself pushed and, you know, to whoever's decision that was. But, you know, very talented dude. He had the – him and Eddie Valentine as VD had some real good matches with the Hay Club and the Backseat Boys and the Briscoes back then and, you know, early, like, 2001 and shit. And I think 2002, they were still doing their thing. You know, they did that. For a short amount of time, you thought that they were actually going to push Dahmer. They put him over Hero at some point. And I thought, like, oh, wow. But I think that was a dude that they could have done a lot more with because he's a guy who could technical wrestle very well. And I think his ability to get the crowd, you know, pop the crowd with the big bump moves and stuff like that, I think he could – and, you know, he has a lot of intensity, too. I think they could have got him over as world champion. They definitely could have used him, you know, in a way where I think he'd work well as a world champion. And he worked, you know, wherever else he was working, that's fine. But he was more of like a CZW guy than the majority of the people who you ever saw brought in. So to me, Dahmer was like a no-brainer for a guy who they should have pushed and put a lot on him because he obviously could have handled it. And, yeah, I think he would have got over very, very well, you know, put in that top spot. But, you know, that wasn't what they did. And Greg Excellent, he's a great guy. I don't know why he was here. I would never say that I don't think the guy knows anything about wrestling. He absolutely does. You know, he runs his own Fed. You know, I think he's a great, great entertainer and everything like this. But for the sake of we're reviewing CCW history and the in, you know, the inner workings of it through time, I don't know why they would contact Greg. Because, I mean, there's like the later stuff where with DJ – he can comment on, but like there's so much of it that's early stuff and it's just like I wasn't there. I wasn't even a fan of it then. And it's nothing to, you know, it's nothing negative towards him. It's just like, why did you pick that guy to add to this panel? Like, they could have added so many different people that were there throughout the whole thing to comment on these different things through time. Like, I don't know. Just not really sure why they went with that. So, like, the panel was strange to begin with because of those reasons, you know what I mean? And I don't know. So, Anyway, Sabato starts out, and his one of his first things like is how he got into it was he didn't like the way the website looked. He was a fan, and he didn't like the website looked. It looked horrible and this and that. So he kept IMing and, you know, instant messaging and direct messaging, whatever you want to call it, sending emails to Dewey and Dennis Shock and whoever else he could to just try to get his foot in to just try to help with website work because he wanted to fix the website because he just didn't like the way it looks. That was his initial thing. So he's doing website work. And as far as what he said, he never wanted to be on camera. Now this is a guy that 10 years later is sitting in a fucking panel being filmed by Smart Mark Video. This is a guy that didn't ever want to be on camera. So you would think that 10 years later, you just go the fuck away if that wasn't your agenda to be on camera. But instead, you're doing interviews and super bitter about everything, and then you're sitting on a panel, but you never wanted to be on camera. Gotcha. Okay. And then everything with Sabato is, we did two cage matches, we did this, and when we did this, and when we did this, like, you could swear by the way that he talks that he was co-owner of CZW at some point, because that's the way that he puts it across, like, we did this, and we did this, and we did this. And from everything he's talking about himself, he's considering himself one of the bookers or a booker or this and this. He says straight off, to me, it seems like he was just like a gopher or a stooge or however you want to put it. He was just a guy they just had do shit that they didn't feel like doing. Hey, call this guy, you know, fucking get this guy's plane flight. Go get fucking tickets for that guy. Hey, go hand that guy this money. Go do this or go do that. Fucking gopher. You know what I mean? And he even admitted straight off, John never liked him. So John Zandig, the owner of CZW, never liked you, but you consider yourself some form of head booker or some kind of booker, even though you were only a go-between for the most part. How is that? How exactly is that that you were like a booker? I don't really understand. And randomly, like, they start talking about the arena and calls all the people who walked up to the arena fans, like, the walk-up fans to the arena scumbags. He said, oh, they're all scumbags. So, that's, you know, that's his type of thing. I'm not even going to go into Brett calling someone a scumbag. That's ridiculous. Let me see. The guy's just a dickhead, Sabato. They're talking about the IWA invasion angle, and they're talking about how the angle's enhanced by using the real cops and arresting JC and Ian, and he just randomly throws in there, that wasn't a first time for either one of them. Like, first off, JC's already dead, like, when they did this and everything like that, because this is recent. Why would you just want to add that? Is that, that's just your random dickhead comment? Yeah, you know I mean, so you're just going to be like a message board douchebag while sitting in a fucking panel? You know what I'm saying? Like, there should be someone that holds him accountable for that type of shit and smacks him in his fucking mouth. You know what I mean? You're running an angle with cops and shit and like, oh, it wasn't the first time for those two. Like, dude, what the fuck is the purpose of that? Do you think you look cool? Like, there's something about the dude that he thinks he's cool or he thinks what he does out there, talking the shit that he does is okay or is cool. It's ridiculous. You know, another thing, it was interesting too, you know, when they actually got up to the DJ era, they, Greg admitted, like, yeah, fucking DJ never pushed Adam Cole until someone else did. And then he did that. And that's something that I said. And, you know, maybe not Adam Cole as the number one example, but it is, you know, what I've been saying for a long time. He waits and waits and waits and waits to pull the trigger on things that other people end up doing. And then they get the credit for it because they're the guy that put the guy on top. And you know, it's just fucking bullshit. It's complete ridiculous line of thinking that you have forever on the indies when anybody can get fucking booked anywhere and booked anyway, and you think you're just going to hold something in your pocket. And then by the time you do it, everybody else has done it already. So it looks like shit. It looks like you're following their suit when they were working for you first. It's real dumb. So then Sabato goes on, this cool guy, says he goes on to say that Zandig called him like 12 times on Mother's Day, and he had a panic attack, and he was hospitalized, and he was put him right in the hospital. And that's when he quit, because he couldn't handle it. And he was getting paid $50 to ref and whatever, I guess. They were spending, another interesting thing, they were spending $1,400 a week on wired TV, which, you know, like I said, was a complete fucking ridiculous idea to start with. They were running a TV product that they were more or less using dark matches in order to push their product. They were pushing their product with the thing that less represented their product than anything. You know what I mean? Like, before they were even pushing Adam Cole, they'd do Adam Cole, Tyler Veritas, and that was their TV program. Which, nothing wrong with that, but when that's the first match on your card because you weren't anywhere near pushing these guys, and, you know, you had your main events that were fucking, you know, hardcore, and then you had other stuff that were your headliners, what exactly was your... was your idea? Like, what exactly was the wired thing ever supposed to be? Because you were pushing something on TV that was costing you money that you weren't even pushing in your fucking company. Like, it's very confusing. Very, very confusing to try to grasp that concept. Greg was saying, too, when he went to Germany, he paid for his flight. It was $600, and he pretty much broke even on gimmicks and getting paid to work. And, you know, I think I said a little bit about it last week, but I don't frown on that whatsoever. Because if you wanted to go somewhere so bad that you would fly there with your family, or you would fly there or however else, and that's more or less what he did, is he did a vacation, and then he got to work and sell his gimmicks and more or less break even. If there's somewhere you wanted to go, you would fucking fly there anyway. What does it matter if you fucking worked when you got over there? Obviously, you know, it means more and it's respected more for you to, you know, for you to get paid to do what you're doing, or for someone to fly you out there, of course that's going to be more respected. But if that's somewhere you wanted to go anyway, and that's the only way it's going to happen, well, shit, do that. And then if they want to fly you back because you make your good impression, then fucking whose win is that? That's you all day for putting out the effort, whether it be, you know, through your pocket, you know, and your ring work or whatever. You know, you put out any effort you're able to do to get your foot in the door, and then, you know, from there you got something. So I think that's really honest, and I don't frown on that whatsoever. It's funny too, because like I said, every time Sabato, when he went on that fucking interview with the Mike and Tom show, he had said something about the one match where I forget what match it was, but it was a match, and Gage was wrestling somebody, and Sabato was really drunk, he said, and he was at the show, and then earlier in this DVD too, he was talking about they shouldn't allow any, you know, substances or whatever. If you're running a company, you shouldn't be allowing anyone to do this. But meanwhile, he was drunk, didn't want to ref, but then agreed to it and went out there drunk. And then, you know what I mean? But just justifies it because I wasn't originally planned to do it, so I went out there drunk. And then he goes, well, Gage, you know, did spots that he didn't want to do, and fucking the refs were supposed to get him out, not the refs, the security, Shawnee and them were supposed to get him out of there, but they didn't do it fast enough, and Gage was fucking him up. And on this interview, because he was around other people that would probably call him on it, he just said he wanted to get up and leave. When he fucking said on fucking Mike and Tom shit that he wanted to get up and embarrass Nick Gage in front of everybody. So he was playing a little more of a tough guy when he was on the fucking radio with somebody, but when he was in front of these guys, he said he just wanted to get up and leave and blah, blah, blah. But every time, every single time that everybody was talking about Gage, he just no-sold and just sat there with his arms folded like, I don't want to talk. And I just thought that was hilarious. I just thought that was the funniest thing, like, as far as this thing. And then, like, Brett brings up, like, the, you know, the deaths that have happened and stuff, and he reads the names down and really never even, like, until other people start bringing it up, he didn't hit, like, all the names. And Greg's wearing a fucking Larry Sweeney shirt, and he didn't even bring up Sweeney, and then Greg brought him up, and they're, oh, yeah, shit, you're wearing a shirt. So it's just, you know, crazy like that. But, and what was I going to say? The other thing about the Gage thing. I can't think of it. But, yeah, I mean, overall, like, pretty entertaining. The thing is I'm just kind of a mark for CZW stuff. Like, I'm a sucker for CZW. I don't even want to say mark, but, you know, whatever you want to call it. I don't give a shit. I'm kind of a sucker for CZW stuff. Except for, you know, you're not going to catch me wearing a motherfucking $85 windbreaker unless you fucking sell it to me with $50 in the pocket. And then I'll think about that. You know, actually, to speak to that sucker for CZW stuff, I actually purchased the RF video, I think it was 7-8 hour DJ hide shoot. So within a couple weeks, I'll definitely be reviewing that because, well, I'm going to have a lot to say about it, I'm sure. And from what I hear, it's pretty entertaining. So definitely going to check that out and review it. Next week, I'll be reviewing the CZW show. So I don't think I'm going to get into the DJ thing because I got to watch the whole thing. It's going to take me a few nights. I can't do the marathon 7-hour joint. I couldn't do it with this round table thing. I definitely like to see some more round tables and stuff. Like I said, it was really weird the way that they selected. I know I had like another thing or two to say about that, but it was also funny too because they brought up Brody Lee and they were saying how Zandig, when he saw Brody Lee, he was telling people, including like around Brody, saying, "Oh, I want this guy to be the next wife beater." And Brody said, "Who the fuck is the wife beater?" It's funny, like the difference in like what Zandig would see was what CZW was, and like obviously Brody had a little bit higher expectations than being the next wife beater. And I just think it's funny. So CZW Saturday, I think it's another high pay-per-view. And what time? 7:30, high pay-per-view, CZW, IPPV.com. Main event, Drew Gulak versus Lucky 13, which I think Drew will pull this match together and make it good, but I think it's ridiculous. They haven't even booked fucking Lucky High on the mid card. They haven't even put Lucky in a fucking best of the best, and they're gonna give him a fucking world title shot because they put him over towards the end of Cage of Death. Fuck out of here. That shit is retarded. That shit it doesn't make any fucking sense whatsoever. Like I said, I'm not taking anything away from the guy's talent. They haven't even put the guy over in a mid card. They haven't given the guy a fucking junior heavyweight title. They haven't done anything in the way of showing that they give a fuck about this guy. So to give him a world title shot is fucking ignorant. It's dumb. Arrow Boy is going to face off against Danny Havoc in an ultra-violent thing. I think Arrow Boy's from Mexico. So, you know, unseen CZW, debut of Arrow Boy. That should be really good. From what I hear, he's good. I have seen nothing from him, so I can't really say for sure. The Blackout's going to defend their tag titles against the Beaver Boys. That should be very good. Murderers Row, I still want an explanation on when they came up with that shit. Alex Colon is defending his thing versus that stupid fucking title against Devin Moore for, again, not really a lot of reason. No idea why. Chris Dickinson is facing Biff Busick, which is the other huge reason why I'm going to check the show out. I have no idea how the other show went down with Tremont's company over there on point. They had just wrestled there, so this will be their second showdown. I have no idea how the other one went. I'm sure it was good. So this one should be really good, too. Ohio is for Killers, Dave and Jay Chris versus the Juicy Product of David Starr, JT Dunn. Greg Excellent versus Joe Gacy. Shane Strickland, Azriel, and Pepper Parks in a three-way. And Kimberly will be there to address Christina Von Erie. Also, Masada versus Alexander James, which I guess is only, you know, a little bit more of a, you know, a build to the Drew Gulak rematch, because, I mean, there's nothing credible about Alexander James, so it's going to be a squash, you know, be a Masada. Pre-pay-per-view Beyond Showcase match for the live fans only is Team Tremendous of Dan Barry and Bill Carr versus Milk Chocolate. Those are those two dudes I think that Chris Dickinson killed a couple months ago. So, yeah, should be a pretty good show. January shows normally suck, so we'll see if this one follows suit, or hopefully they you know, put something in their head that goes, you know what, let's fucking come through on this one. Obviously, you know, just not the best of things. Anyway, also got the customized Xbox from Ruckus that made for MJ, and she loves it. It's great shit. It's 3,500 games on this thing. You know, it's customized. Got orange tiger stripes on it with her name and shit. It's off the chain. So definitely anybody wants to check out his thing, go over, you know, Claude Marrow's on Facebook, or check out Chocolate City Customs on there. Hit him up. Tell him J-Cat sent you, man. He's got the hookup. All the mods, he could do anything you want to any system. The dude is off the fucking chain, so hit that dude up. Beyond that, plugs, I got Sports Den, they're on tonight, talking all sorts of sports. Tomorrow night, Wrestling Soup's back, New Year, they're back doing their thing, and Stern Nation is also on tomorrow night, check them out. I believe they're doing Saturday mornings now or something like that, like the old kids' cartoons. Anyway, check out Stern Nation on Facebook. Check out WrestlingSoup.com. The Shiznet, Yolanda over there doing her thing. I think that's everything. I think I got everything. I think I did better with the show this week than I did last week. Didn't lose my focus too much. But, yeah, I think that's all I got. So check it all out and check me out next week. I'm not sure if I have a guest in yet now, but, yeah, you know when I'm on. All right? Check you motherfuckers out next week. Peace.
There's a cat in the house. Cat in the house. What's she get? There's a cat in the house.
Yakuza Kick Radio. Kill them all. Back on top. Think about it. Fuck Hulk Hogan.
Because these motherfuckers are geniuses.
Keep it up, my nigga.
What the fuck?
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town, and it's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.